Welcome back to Understanding VC. I am your host, Rahul. Today, my guest is Valerie Van Wu. Valerie is a founding partner at Ansible Ventures, a pre-seed and seed fund based in Ho Chi Minh City, Vietnam. Prior to Ansible Ventures, she was a Vietnam country head at Venture Capital, and prior to that, a senior consultant in Deloitte US, serving various clients in the investment management industry. Now, let's talk to her. Hi, Valerie. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you, Rahul. So awesome to see you today. And, you know, this is my first podcast for 2023 that I'm the guest because, you know, I start my own podcast. So I haven't been on other people's podcasts for a long time now. So this is my first guest podcast for 2023. It's going to be awesome.
Yeah. So you're not based in Ho Chi Minh City, right? But did you grow up there?
No, actually, I moved to Ho Chi Minh City 3 years ago in 2019. But I was born and raised and grew up most of my time in Hanoi. Okay. So I grew up in a relatively poor area of Hanoi, which is a bit like kind of a bit rural outside of Hanoi a bit. But yeah, that's where I was born and raised.
Okay. So, you know, before the unification, Hanoi was part of North Vietnam and Ho Chi Minh was South Vietnam, right? So how are these two cities different now in terms of culture?
Yeah, without going too much into politics, there's a lot of differences between the two cities. And that's why I moved to Ho Chi Minh City. So Hanoi is the capital city of Vietnam. So there are more like political influence. City feels a bit more traditional and conservative. People dress up way more than Ho Chi Minh City. I think also because of the weather, because Hanoi has four seasons. Ho Chi Minh City only has two seasons, you know, rainy season and dry season. And it's pretty much hot and humid year round. So people in Ho Chi Minh City come from all over the place, like not just Vietnam, like all the city in Vietnam, but also like from many countries, because most of the MNC corporates, when they set up their business in Vietnam, they usually set up in Ho Chi Minh City. So it's a much more vibrant for economy, for business purpose. You know, it's also the largest city of Vietnam and contribute the most to Vietnam GDP. So if you are in business or, you know, startups in venture capital world, most likely they are located in Ho Chi Minh City. If they are in the field of politics or academy, something related to government, then Hanoi is a better city for them to live in. And that's why I moved to Ho Chi Minh City.
Okay. Growing up, you know, what were your interests, like hobbies and things like that?
Yeah. So actually, I did not grow up with like a lot of technology. We, like I share, we come from a very modest and a humble family. So surrounding my family was like rice field, it's in wet markets, right? So I did not have like computer to play with. So my day-to-day games and entertainment was like traditional game like Squid Games, if you watch that TV show. So very, very simple games. And like we would play with like rocks and sands. And then we would play roles by, I don't know, harvesting random fruits on the street. But yeah, it was a good time. But I got really curious early on, before even, you know, entering primary school. Before even entering, you know, formal first grade education. So I love reading. From the moment I know how to read, I just like try to get every book that I can touch. So most of my time, like I love to read at young age and I was really curious. And then that's why when I enter primary school, I think my parents see that early on and they invest a lot in my education. You know, I've spent most of my time reading, mostly not fiction book, a book about adventures. I love competition. So in like fifth grade, I entered my first math competition, which I did not win. But from that moment on, I enter competition every year. So I enter a literature competition and then I enter French competition and then I won third prize for French. It's only French, but I think going through academic competition and, you know, when I was like 6 or 7 years, when teacher asked like, what do you want to be when you grow up? My answer was becoming a scientist. I have no idea, but for me, scientists is so cool because they discover new things and they like, always get to work on the labs and always like get to learn different things every day. And that's why I think it's such a cool job, a cool major. Yeah, I did not know much back then. And then later on, when I entered high school, I realized my chemistry and physics suck. So yeah, scientists is like out of the picture for me. But yeah, that's my pretty much my childhood. Yeah.
Yeah. So did somebody encourage you to start reading, or you just picked it up on your own?
No, nobody really encouraged. I was so hungry for books. Like, I just get all the books that I can get into and just read like in 1 or 2 days and finish the whole book in like 1 or 2 days. So because the school that I went to is a bit further from my home, usually when there's like a break period, I just go to my friend's house to take a nap and then come back to school for afternoon period. So when I go to my friend's house, her dad collected a lot of books. So I just grab those books like every week. So I think my friend's house was like my library growing up.
Yeah, you decided you didn't want to become a scientist, but then how come you ended up becoming a VC in the end?
Yeah. Like I mentioned, my chemistry and my physics really suck. I find out in high school. And even though in college, I tried to take more classes, I think organic chemistry was super tough. Didn't do too well.
I remember organic chemistry. Yeah, that was tough.
Yeah, so in even calculus, I think I did well up until calculus 3. When it get to like calculus 4, I struggle. So, you know, I realized this is not for me. And that's why I study accounting. Initially, I started my career at Deloitte. So I was not a VC fresh out of college. So I study accounting because I was pretty good at math, not to the calculus 4 level, but, you know, I did really well up to calculus 3. And I found that accounting and finance make more sense to me. I like math and I like the logic problem that those classes at the same time seems like the job opportunity for those field are really stable. And, you know, I was an international student in the US, so I do want to get a job in the US after graduation. So that's why I study accounting and took also finance classes. And start my career at Deloitte.
Deloitte, it was more like a consultancy role, I'm assuming.
Yeah. So I was consultant for a lot of hedge fund, private equity and venture capitals in the US. So I helped them structuring, doing the compliance for these funds. And through that first job out of college, I found out my true passion, which is investment. So I instead of spending, you know, times reading the limited partner agreement to design the compliance system or working with the compliance team, I love reading the financial statements to see what investment that they made last year, how much like profit and loss they made last year, and then why they invested in this company. Because, you know, I look at some private equity funds financial statement and some venture capital as well. So I got really, really interested in doing private investments. At the same time, you know, I saw that career path in the US was relatively stable, and it scared me. I think I thrive in much more like uncertainty and much more like chaotic environment. At the same time, I saw that Vietnam has better opportunity in terms of like can have more upside, and, you know, I can make more impact in Vietnam because the growth trajectory is, you know, Vietnam is one of the fastest country in the world, and venture capital in Vietnam back then was around like, when I consider moving back to Vietnam, it was about 2017, 2018. There wasn't much activity or fund that invest in Vietnam. And I just see that this is my chance. If I want to spend the rest of my career doing something meaningful and purposeful, moving back to Vietnam is my only, like, the best path. That's why I, you know, I left Deloitte and moved back to Vietnam and moved to Ho Chi Minh City in 2019.
Yeah. So, yeah, congrats on raising your first close of the fund, Ansible Ventures. Yeah. I'd like to know more about Ansible Ventures.
Sure. Thank you so much. Yeah, so last year I founded Ansible Ventures in partnership with Auto Partners. Ansible Venture is a dedicated pre-seed and seed fund, but mainly pre-seed, based in Vietnam, you know, my home country, my home market. We really take pride in investing in the team from day zero. So acting as their trusted co-founder from day zero and adding value, adding advice beside, you know, just investing just capital from day zero. And, you know, our check size is pretty flexible, ranging from 100K to a million. But we like to lead rounds, especially pre-seed rounds, and are open to co-invest with other partners. And I think we like to partner with founders who think differently and move the world forward, but most importantly, move Vietnam forward. Yeah.
So can I just clarify, you mentioned partnering with founders from day one, right? So these are seasoned founders slash founding team, or like you would also invest in first-time founders?
Yeah, so from my past investment experience, in my first two investment from Ansible, they are all seasoned entrepreneurs who might be first-time founders, but they have expertise in that field before already. So before starting this education company, they already work in investment in education industry, so they know, you know, the unit economics of education industry in and out. Or if they are first-time founders in like fintech e-commerce, but their past experience was like actually working for this big tech company for like almost 10 years. So that was my past investment and also current investment in Ansible. However, now I'm challenged my own self. I question my own self, like, am I being adaptable? And I'm, you know, kind of limit myself too much because I have recently interacted with a lot of young people, Gen Z founders and Gen Z operators. And to be honest, they are so smart. I have learned so much from them. So if I don't take a chance on, you know, betting and take a risk on these first-time founders, young first-time founders, maybe I might miss something out. So that's why I'm open to working with like first-time founders and even like younger operators now, as long as they can show me like they know the fields and they have the expertise way deeper than I do. So I'm being much more open-minded now.
I always find young people scary good, you know.
I
keep thinking, you know, what was I doing when I was so young?
I know. This, you talk to 20 years old, no, not even. So you talk to 18, 19 years old students who just were freshly graduated from high school and like now in first year or second year of university. And their resume is already like four pages with full of volunteering, full of founding this organization experience. They intern at like five different companies in high school days. So I was so amazed. That's why I'm being a lot more open-minded now.
Yeah. So before we started recording, you asked me whether I work with a team for editing and stuff. So I work with somebody who's now in college. And in college, he's already doing a podcast on engineering. And plus, he's helping me with all the editing and stuff. I had no clue what I was doing when I was in college.
No idea. Yeah. But I'm so amazed by Gen Z. And I think Gen A, like the generation after Gen Z, is going to be even crazier. They are digital native, crypto native. They, you know, they had more adversity growing up, especially with like COVID babies. So yeah, I think they will teach us a lot.
I mean, I asked them the question, why are you taking so much of initiative? Then the question or answer always is, there's a lot more competition.
Exactly. So, I think so. But they learn so fast. They do everything so fast, and I'm being tough by Gen Z every day. They teach me everything now.
So I was reading your press release when you launched the fund, when you announced your first close. It said Ansible Ventures aims to become a gatekeeper for global funds and strategic investors to enter the market alongside a trusted VC investor partner. How so in Vietnam?
Yeah, so the word gatekeeper, I think, can be also used by enabler. So, you know, I'm building a gateway, a bridge between Vietnam to the world. Because actually, when I fundraise, most of my fundraising trips are made outside of Vietnam. And that's why 98% of my LPs, my limited partners or investors in Ansible, are actually not Vietnamese. So most of them are from Singapore, from India, from the US, from Indonesia. And among these investors, I have themselves who are managing directors of managing partners of global PE funds, or they are seasoned, successful entrepreneurs across the globe, especially Indonesia, a market that is very similar to Vietnam. So these experts and these investors who are my LPs can give a lot of advice and values to not only just myself, but also the entrepreneurs that I work with, I partner with. So next week, I'm having my first event for the year. Two of my LPs who are very seasoned executive in healthcare visiting Vietnam, and I'm hosting a small event for health tech for startup founders to meet with this global executive of very large health tech and biotech companies. And if you look at all the hospital in Vietnam, all of them are using their technology. So I think it's amazing to bridge this kind of like global network and global knowledge to Vietnam, because not a lot of founders, operators in Vietnam have the privilege, have the chance to meet with them and hear, you know, what's going on in the world. Yeah.
Yeah. So the positioning, I guess, is like help for local founders for global expansion and global understanding how healthcare works, and also for global investors on their exposure to Vietnam.
Yeah. Am I right? So, yep. So bring the best of the world to Vietnam and bring the best of Vietnam to the world.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah. So did you have, many doubters while you were raising your fund, because you're young and, if this first fund does not succeed, then it's difficult to close a second fund, right? So were there detractors?
Yeah. Of course, I have a lot of doubters, and some people even told me like, hey, have you considered finding another job if this gig doesn't work out? Yeah, I know this fund like is hiring. Yeah, maybe you should also have a backup options. Yeah, of course, I have a lot of doubters, and there's always time that you feel, you know, people don't take you seriously. And yeah. I mean, we are the underdog. I'm not sure about yourself. I need to spend more time with you, but I'm always being underestimated, you know, being younger and, you know, did not really come from a privileged background or did not go to like Ivy League. That doesn't give me the same, you know, network that other fund managers have. But all of that elements, I tend not to think about it. And for me, being a venture capital is like walking in the street of Ho Chi Minh City or any other emerging city in the world. It's crazy, it's chaotic, it's very noisy, it's dangerous. You might be hit at any moment because, you know, they're like cars, they're like bike, they're like tuk-tuks. But you just have to keep going confidently, because if you stop, you will get hit. So just keep going, keep looking forward, and don't think about all those noise. And also, I think another book that really helped me is Edge by Laura Huang. Maybe I can give a quick summary of the main idea of the book.
Yeah.
So the main idea of the book is edge, standing for, you know, enrich, delight, guide, and effort. So if we come from, you know, if we are underdog, hard work alone will not help us succeed. It's take a lot more than just the, you know, hard work, because, you know, we have like different circumstances, right? So first of all, for enrich, bring values to others before you even ask something from them. So whenever I enter a conversation, a pitch or like a podcast with you, I always try to think like, how can I help this person? Instead of like, oh, I'm actually pitching fundraising from him or her. Actually, no. Yeah. I always think of like, what value do I bring to them?
Yeah.
The second one is delight. So, you know, always bring a positive experience with, and when you interact with other people, like, can we make a joke? Can we make the conversation less heavy? Yeah, just bring more positivity. I don't like too, you know, pessimistic kind of conversation. So even though the industry is going to a tough time, always, you know, back up with a few more positive statistics and, you know, brighter picture that help them have a more like fun, I mean, like ideas during that meeting, for example. And then the third one is like guide. So kind of guide people when you have interaction with other people, guide them on how you want to be perceived. So guide others to the attribution that you want to, that you want them to make about. So I tend to not compare myself with others, and then always try to like showcase my value, be helpful to others. And then lastly is the effort. of course, it's always about hard work. Life is not fair. So we have to prepare, you know, that mental toughness and always be well prepared and always come to the meeting with like full of knowledge, I guess. And I think lastly, this point is outside of the book, but always surround yourself with your best supporting network circle. So yeah, I have a group of friends that they are like family to me. So I tell them everything, and then they also guide me to a lot of issues. Like, and then in return, you know, I also help them with their own problems. And actually, because we have that tiny conversation, we team up together to do my first podcast, Forward Vietnam Podcast. So I team up with two of my really good friends in that group. But actually in that group, in that community, we have more than just two guys. I'm hoping to get more friends on that podcast. And the podcast is in Vietnamese right now because I don't see that we have quality content in Vietnamese. We have a lot of content in English, but nothing in Vietnamese. So that's why right now it's still in Vietnamese. Yeah, so that's how I cope with those doubters and a challenge in life.
Yeah. So I'm guessing you're very confident that you can succeed in VC now.
Yeah. Just like I said, just like walking in the street of any emerging market city, like go to Delhi, the street is insane. But you insane. But you cannot stop.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. Keep looking forward.
Yeah. You mentioned being underdogs. Yeah, definitely. For somebody like me to break into VC, and also I think if that happens, that would be a great underdog story because it's really, really hard. I don't have the background or a lot of things that traditionally VCs have.
Yeah.
So it's right.
Yeah. But like, look at Harry Stebbings. He also doesn't come from that background. He doesn't even finish college. And now he's managing like, I don't know how much AUM exactly, but he's my role model. And he's, of course, younger than I am.
So I kind of figured that your areas of interest in terms of investments are like edtech, fintech, generally consumer tech. Why did you pick consumer tech for investments?
Yeah, so this is because my fund is Vietnam focused. So my strategy had to also adapt with the local regulatory environment and landscape in Vietnam. And currently, consumer internet is the most attractive for me. Vietnam e-commerce is going to be about 40 billion by 2025. And also, if you look at retail only, it's going to be like 160 billion. And, you know, there's a rising urbanization trends in Vietnam. And also, we are adding more and more middle class and new consumer class in Vietnam, which is like 36 million by the next decade. And a lot of this consumer, this new middle class, don't have the products or the brands that cater to their need. And I think they deserve better. I'm talking about my own experience. Like when I look at, for example, beauty and personal care, when I look at like skincare brands in Vietnam, there's no local homegrown brand that actually fit with my, you know, Southeast Asian skin that always has interact with a lot of dust and humid weather in Ho Chi Minh City. The brands that are available for purchase in the store right now are, you know, all come from like Korea or Japan that have a different formula that fit with, you know, Korean and Japanese skin much better. And also they are more expensive as well because, you know, they are made in Korea or Japan. However, the local brands, local homegrown brand, fit with Vietnamese skin, but they don't know how to package as well as, you know, other foreign brands. They don't know how to do marketing, or they don't know how to do distribution, etc. So I have stronger thesis on, you know, consumer tech. And that's an example in the beauty and personal care. If we look at healthcare, actually, even though Vietnam population is still young and increasing, by after 2030, it's actually will decrease, and the family size of Vietnam is getting smaller. So women are giving birth less than before, and our family size is getting actually a lot smaller now because we want to spend more on healthcare per person rather than, you know, have a lot of babies and don't really take care or pay
all of
good attention to anyone. So the trend right now is, you know, quality over quantity. So healthcare and even education, we all deserve better. the new middle class, the new consumption class in Vietnam all deserve, not just in terms of like D2C brands, but also like education, healthcare, private healthcare, preventative healthcare. Yeah. And that's why I like consumer tech for Vietnam. For fintech, of course, fintech and e-commerce goes hands in hand. So every time you make a e-commerce transaction, you also double down on fintech, on payment, on lending, etc. But I think it takes more time in terms of like regulatory, you know, framework and sandbox. We are still a bit behind all the neighboring country, unfortunately. So right now, all the fintech startups in Vietnam right now are founded and operated by hustlers. They choose to start these companies and, you know, drive the curve ahead, regardless of having a sandbox or guidance on legal or not, because they are hustlers, they are innovators. But yeah, for VCs, fintech, I think, will require more patience.
Yeah, there would also be regulations that comes into play. And then if you're not on the right side of the regulation, then you immediately have to shut shop, right?
Yep.
Yeah. And can I ask, so when it comes to creating large consumer companies, one thing is the purchasing power of people, right? So the per capita GDP of Vietnam, my understanding, is around $4,500 USD at the moment. So where do you think that should reach, where, you know, the economy can support large consumer brands?
Yeah. So actually, if you look at the two largest city in Vietnam, Hanoi and Ho Chi Minh City, and especially Ho Chi Minh City, that GDP per capita is higher. I'm sure it's gonna reach, I think it's at least 8,000 right now, but I think it's really on par with like Bangkok metropolitan area or even like Jakarta metropolitan area. So yeah, I think the opportunity and the room for consumption, especially new retail, you know, introducing online to offline experience, omni-channels, and better customer experience to Vietnamese is, you know, it's still very potential.
Yeah. And one other thing, when it comes to the small medium enterprises adopting, you know, apps to improve their efficiency in running businesses, how open are Vietnamese businesses to this?
I'm making
a comparison with India. So in India, the openness to adopt SaaS solutions to run your small business is very low. It's even lower than Indonesia. So I would like to understand what is the situation in Vietnam.
Yeah, I think it's that I hope, and I think it's definitely more open than India, because a lot of me business owners actually ask me like what software they can use to reduce the paperwork, and also the accounting process is being forced to digitalize. So being forced by the Ministry of Finance. So I foresee, you know, a lot of like this invoicing, accounting tech are no longer, you know, going to be like taboo. Yeah. And I think they are a lot more open-minded than SMEs owners in India.
Okay. And we spoke about adding value to the startups from day one, right? So in what ways do you plan to add values to not just your portfolio startups, but also to the wider ecosystem?
Yeah. I love these questions. So I think my values, this is my own words. So I'm bringing the three C's to the Vietnam startup ecosystem and Southeast Asia ecosystem as well. So the first C is conviction. Okay. I have highly strong belief in Vietnam. You know, I think Vietnam has one of the strongest like talents in the world. You know, we have the highest number of STEM graduates of engineering, really on par with what, you know, engineering talents in India has to offer. So I'm always advocating for the growth of Vietnam, you know, relatively stable environments and fast, and the economy is still growing every year. So last year, our growth, GDP growth was 8.0%. I believe, you know, there will be more policies that support startups and support, you know, more innovation, more sandbox for across all the industry. I'm happy to talk about Vietnam startup ecosystem any moment, because I want to bring Vietnam startup ecosystem to the world. So my first C is conviction. And that's why I start the fund. If I don't have conviction in Vietnam, then I wouldn't do it, right? The second C is community. Yeah. So the second C is community. Community here is like-minded individual who have interests in Vietnam. They don't have to live in Vietnam or be located in Vietnam. They just need to have like some interest and some kind of, they want to make a good impact to Vietnam. So that's why, you know, I start Career Opportunity in Vietnam, which is a nonprofit organization that guides and help young professionals globally. When they have questions about Vietnam or they want to look for a job in Vietnam, they can go to that group and see who are hiring. Of course, a lot of the opportunity I bring up right now are mostly coming from startups and venture capitals. Yeah. But we have quarterly events and we invite professionals from different industry in Vietnam, not just startups, to share about, you know, their journey in Vietnam, why they come back to Vietnam, what they should consider if they move back to Vietnam, etc. Beside the Career Opportunity in Vietnam group, I also try to meet with a lot of overseas Vietnamese everywhere I go and hear about their story and just have a more open-minded. And yeah, that's the second C, community. And the last C is content. Like I mentioned earlier, feel like, and TikTok as well. So I feel like there's not much Vietnamese content, like content in Vietnamese language about startup, about VC that can reach the mass. And so that's why a lot of college students, like young people, think that VCs or startup are something really fancy and not rich. And I want to change that mindset. I want, you know, even high school students know about venture capital, and like even high school students have their own room to start a competition in entrepreneurship, for example. And later on, when they enter university, they can take a class about entrepreneurship or VC. So that's why I also started a TikTok channel, because TikTok is the best way to reach younger people, especially Gen Z generation. And that's why I do the podcast as well. So I have two channels because they are very different forms. So podcast is long form content. So every episode that we do on average is 1 hour. So we discuss a lot in depth about various topics. And I think that's great. But I also want to have a short form channel that I can just talk about VC, just talk about like startups, talk about how a day in my life is like, what do VC look for startups? If you want to become a VC, what are the path to get there? What are some tips and tricks in interviewing for VC, etc.? So I want like for scaling this community, this industry, I think content is the best way to reach everyone. And that's the 3C that I'm offering to the ecosystem.
Yeah. I also believe content is a great way to build a community. And you mentioned about overseas Vietnamese and, you know, engaging with them. So what is the current situation? Is there interest from overseas Vietnamese or people of Vietnamese origin in the US and other parts of the world to come back to Vietnam to build startups and also maybe finance like as VCs?
Yeah. So obviously I'm not a diaspora, I'm not an overseas Vietnamese because I spend more time in Vietnam than in the US. But through a lot of recent interaction with Vietnamese diaspora and overseas Vietnamese, they all want to contribute. Even though, you know, they might not be ready or they might not want to relocate to Vietnam permanently, but inside them, everyone knows that they have Vietnamese blood and they want to remember and contribute to their origin, to their home, and find their community. So I recently went to Berlin, which is the second largest startup ecosystem, startup city in Europe, just behind London. So my friend was kind enough to host a dinner and invited a lot of overseas Vietnamese, German. You know, they don't speak Vietnamese too well because they were born and raised in Germany, but they just want to learn about Vietnam. So they were so happy to meet with me. Like they expressed that they never have a community of Vietnamese growing up. Never. This is like the first professional community that actually aligned with them, be related to what they're doing, which is, you know, startup and VC and technology. So they were really happy, and they like even look at outsourcing their tech team to Vietnam. They even look at, you know, having a sales team in Vietnam because they also want to tackle and enter Southeast Asia market. If they want to enter Southeast Asia market, why don't they have a sales team in Vietnam, right? a lot of Vietnamese, younger Vietnamese now can also speak English. So yeah, actually, I also have a lot of friends in New York City, and they also want to contribute. You know, the founder of the startup called Republic actually sponsor Viet Challenge, which is a competition that bring Vietnamese startups to pitch to investor in New York City in the US. Nice. So even though they might not live in Vietnam, but they all want to make an impact to their home, to their origin. And yeah, and another organization in New York called Vietnam New York, VNNY, they are also hosting an event. They invited Ching Chu, who is a legendary in Wall Street, who's a Vietnamese American. He retired from Blackstone and was one of the most successful investor in Blackstone. And now he founded his own PE firm as well. Yeah, so that organization in New York is hosting the event and invited him to share. And he's like a role model for all the Vietnamese kid in finance field. So having that kind of event is just so inspiring. Is giving back to the community without even have to, you know, flying to Vietnam. But after the Berlin trip, actually two of my friends that I met in the Berlin dinner are flying to Vietnam after Lunar New Year. Yeah, because one is actually considering outsourcing to Vietnam, and one is considering having a sales team in Vietnam because he wants to enter Singapore. So I make something happen here. I mean, we're just very happy to see that bridge between Vietnamese diaspora and, you know, Vietnam. Yeah. So they all want to contribute, even though they don't live in Vietnam.
Yeah. Awesome. This has been great, Valerie. I wish you all the very best to having a very successful VC career. Thank you for taking the time to do this.
Yeah, thank you. Just happy to do this, really.